Okay, welcome to episode 86 of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. In today's episode, I'm going to essentially discuss how to be an excellent intern. There are many facets to being an excellent intern, but that is this is just basically like a general overview of like your sort of like your job descriptions as an intern, especially for like a medicine intern or like a transitional year intern. I'll talk about like some key things, expand on some key things, and just essentially like mention some high yield key things you should do as an intern, right? And really, like, these are born from my experiences being an intern, from mistakes I have made as an intern, from good things I've identified in other people doing well as interns, from mistakes I've identified from other people that have made mistakes as interns, right? So I will just sort of talk through these things in no particular order, and hopefully this should be a relatively short podcast, and we'll get through this. So what's your job description as an intern? First thing is to show up on time for stuff, right? So the thing is, you always want to be early, right? Don't build a reputation as a person that is always late, because the thing is, you'll get noticed and then ultimately you'll get into trouble with that, right? In fact, people think of it as like a professionalism issue, right? And professionalism, once that word becomes dangled around you as a deficiency you have, that can raise some very serious problems in residency, right? Because the thing is, reputation really does matter a lot in residency, and the reputation you build early on is the thing that may ultimately stick with you for the rest of residency, believe it or not, right? Because the thing is, you may do so many good things in the middle of residency, in the end of residency, but really it's the reputation that you acquire early that will ultimately stick, right? So remember this when you're starting out intern year. Essentially, just work on building, you know, a strong, solid reputation with your other residents, with nurses, with your attendants, with the support staff. And really, if you establish this good reputation, it will follow you through, even if you make some mistakes along the way, after that initial good reputation that you have built up. So you should sort of establish a rule for yourself that you should try to get to things like 5 minutes ahead of time. Because really, if your program director notices that you're always early, you're always present at things, you'll be in your program director's good books. And this is basically like, you know, pretty much establishing a savings account that you can withdraw on, you can draw on in the future when you get into trouble, for some troubles you may face down the line in residency. Second thing is to sort of work hard in everything you do, right? Again, don't be known as the lazy resident, because again, if you acquire a reputation as a person that does not do their job, it's a very surefire way to destroy yourself in residency. So really, don't be the person that pawns off admissions on other people. Don't pawn off work on other people, because really, if you acquire that reputation, people will retaliate, and you really will not like the outcome. I mean, the unfortunate situation in many hospitals, in many residency programs, is that hospitals are like a cesspool of gossip, okay? So don't let bad information like, oh, this person doesn't do their job, spread about you. Because again, that can put you into trouble that you do not envisage. Because once, like really, like literally it's your job, so you might as well just do your job, right? Work hard, do your job. So avoid this, just don't be lazy. Because, I mean, you know what you signed up for, even as a college student going into med school, right? So just freaking do your job and you will not get into trouble. Because the thing is, once a rumor starts spreading that you are lazy, it is a very hard reputation to repair, okay? And the problem is, if it gets into the ears of the wrong people, so basically like people in charge, like program directors, directors of medical education and whatnot, you can actually begin to have troubles in residency that are more far-reaching than you had ever, that you could ever imagine, okay? I guess next thing is, obviously, right, you want to see your patients in the morning, pray around and around on your patients. That's kind of obvious. I won't say more than that. Another thing is, you want to get good at coming up with assessment and plans, right? I mean, as a medicine intern, that is like almost like the bane of your existence, right? You want to come up with assessments for problems and plans. And I mean, this may be something I may talk about in the future in a more expansive podcast, but really, how do you identify your problem? How do you make a problem list? It's actually quite easy. The way you make a problem list is, one, you identify lab derangements, right? What, and usually Epic and or Cerner or PowerChart or whatever you use will blank out these things in red, right? If there are lab derangements that are like serious, They should make its way to your problem list. If there are chief complaints that are serious, if the patient's chief complaint should certainly make its way to your problem list. Is there a test that was done, like a chest x-ray or an echo or whatever, that identified a problem? That should make its way to your problem list. Are there super deranged vitals, like sinus tachycardia or whatever, that should make its way to your problem list? Are there chronic problems the patient has at home that they are bringing with them to the hospital, like diabetes, like heart failure? That should make its way to your problem list. That is essentially your problem list. And then literally, for each problem that you write down, the next thing you want to do is to say, okay, how will I assess this problem, right? So if, for example, it's a pneumonia, you're like, oh, you know what, I'll assess this with a decrement in the white count, with a clinical improvement in the patient's symptoms, with an improvement in how their chest x-ray looks every morning. Like, ask yourself, how will you assess these problems? How do you plan to fix this problem? So what are the interventions, right? Are you giving antibiotics? Are you sending them to the cath lab? What's your intervention for the problem? And then how will you track the resolution of that problem? If you basically answer those questions for each of those problems you identified, you've essentially made up your plans for your problems, okay? And really, if you're very systematic in this format, in setting up your assessment and plan, you will be an intern that misses very few things with regards to a patient's hospital course. And then you also want to, if there is some kind of outpatient follow-up that's needed for the patient's problem, you also want to kind of, you know, focus on that in your assessment and plan. Don't forget to continue home medications, right? That's important, right? So you don't want a patient to be on like a chronic med at home, and then you don't do a med rec, so you don't continue those medications in the hospital. And then the problems they came into the hospital with, you add more new problems to that. That's not necessarily a prudent, right? And then another thing with regards to discharge summaries. Discharge summaries, again, this is a freestyle podcast. Discharge summaries, I'll encourage you to start writing them when you admit the patient, okay? And then update them every day. If you do that, your discharge summary can take like a minute, 2 minutes to write. But if you don't and you wait, you're kind of like moseying, lazying about, and you wait till the patient is leaving the hospital to write your discharge summary, then it can become a 1 or 2 hour ordeal. Right, especially for patients with like prolonged stays in the hospital, like 30, 40, 50 day stays in the hospital. That can make your life profoundly miserable, right? And then one other rule is starting low and going high. This is basically a medication rule. So I will encourage you, start and up titrate as needed. It generally does not make any sense to try to go for the highest nuclear dose of a particular medication. That's not particularly smart, because if the patient has an unwelcome side effect, trust me, you probably would not want to experience that if you can avoid it. So start at a low dose. You can always up titrate to the patient's clinical response. And then you definitely want to learn how to read EKGs and chest x-rays. That's just an important thing you want to do as an intern. You also want to get good at presenting your patients. Again, I will encourage you, build a standardized approach. In fact, you know what? Let me just combine this with another thing I guess I want to talk about. And that's like note writing, presenting, all that stuff. The key principle here is you want to develop a standardized approach to things you do in residency, like tasks that you repeat every day in residency. Try to develop approaches to those tasks. Because the thing is, when you develop an approach or like an algorithm in your mind or like a template in your mind that you use for like abstracting information from a patient, rounding in the morning, writing your HPIs, writing discharge summaries, admitting patients to the floor, admitting patients to the ICU. If you can come up with a standardized approach, one, it makes you very efficient. And two, it makes that process almost mindless, right? Because the thing is, if you gain a reputation as an efficient intern that is also accurate, it builds a lot of goodwill with your seniors, with your attendants, and with your program director, okay? That's the kind of good attention you want to attract as an intern. And again, you can do this by developing approaches to all these things. Like literally, I mean, I'm a transitional year resident. I have approaches to how I write discharge summaries, to how I write HPIs, to how I come up with assessment and plans, to how I round on patients in the morning, to how I do my pre-rounding, to how I do my presentations. I have approaches to how I do tasks that I repeat often, right? Because again, that makes me super, 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 super efficient. It is one thing that has helped me tremendously as an intern. Now, next thing is, right, I mean, obviously, you're going to admit patients as an intern. That's your job. And then you also want to sort of learn how to put in the right orders. In fact, if I were you, this is one thing I would focus on very early in intern year, like knowing how to put in the right orders for common things, right? So like medical admit orders, ICU admit orders, like CWAP protocol orders, opioid withdrawal power plans, blood transfusion orders, orders for pressors, orders like common starting doses of like narcotics, orders for the different insulins like basal bolus regimens, orders for ventilators, orders for like the different types of heparins, orders for like blood draws, orders for CBCs, for BMPs, for cultures like respiratory cultures, blood cultures, for consults. I will encourage you to figure out how to put in those orders, because trust me, putting in orders is actually maybe one of your top three responsibilities as an intern. And if you can get very accurate at doing this, it will make your work really fast, because you don't need to keep asking, oh, how do I put in this order? How do I do this? How do I do that? So ask your seniors early and often how they put in certain orders, so that you know exactly, like literally, like what you type into the order screen, so you know what you are ordering for specific situations. Now, if you know that, I mean, there are even order sets that you can create, or order sets that already exist, right? So like order sets for like Hep B, for example, those are things you'll sort of want to be able to conglomerate into like a power plan for yourself. Because think about it, right? You can save your, if you do the work once of sort of like grouping all the Hep B labs together and all the Hep C labs together and all the HIV labs together, you can just literally click on two things and you have all those labs ordered. Instead of, for example, having to order like the Hep B surface antigen and the Hep B core antibody and the Hep B surface antibody and all that individually as you're putting in orders, right? These are all things that can save you time and make you super efficient as an intern. Now, your next task as an intern is to do well on your in-training exams and your boards. So you may say, Divine, here you go with the whole test taken again. The thing is, many people think that studying in residency should not be a thing. Well, think again. You could not be further from the truth. Let me tell you why. And I will give you some very good, very compelling reasons why you should study in residency. The first thing is, you want to be competent. Okay. The thing is, many people think that, oh, you get competent just from seeing patients. That is not true. You can actually learn a lot from literally studying. Okay. Because the thing is, when attendings begin to see as a person that has a good knowledge base, that is competent, guess what? You become more trusted and you become less babied, if such a word exists. If you want to be independent in residency, you can actually acquire a lot of independence if people know that you are competent. And trust me, competence comes from seeing patients and also from learning your craft by literally studying. Okay. The worst thing that can happen to you as an intern or as a resident is to cause patient harm because you have like a lapse in your knowledge, right? I mean, classic example is like screwing up a code because you don't know your ACLS algorithms. Again, do people make mistakes? Of course, you can make mistakes, right? But egregious mistakes, common things that pretty much everyone knows, but you don't know because you are not spending time to attend to your knowledge base, that can put you in trouble very quickly, right? It can put you into the bad book of your program director, right? It can also be a source of lawsuits, not just in residency, but even as an attending in the future. And again, just remember, it's your job, right? Like literally, it's your frigging job. You might as well get good at your craft. This is something you're going to do for the rest of your life, right? I mean, if you're a transitional year intern going into like another specialty, that's a different story. But regardless, this is your job. This is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You might as well spend the time in a controlled environment to learn your craft really well. And the thing is, studying also helps you with exams, right? Because the thing is, say for example, right, you study routinely, you do well on your in-training exams. The thing is, that will help you buy a lot of goodwill. And it actually gets unnecessary attention off your back. Let me give you an example. Right. So say, for example, you're doing super well on your in-training exams. The thing is, you may actually be able to get away with stuff that other people may get in trouble for. Right. But if you sort of look at it on the flip side, if you perform poorly on your in-training exams, you essentially attract attention that is not the good kind. You basically put yourself on your program director's radar because your program director begins to see you as a person that is at risk for failing exams in the future. So you essentially come under their watchlight. And to be honest, this is the last thing you want to do. You don't want to come under the watchlight of a program director. And this is something you may say, Divine, come on, it's not a big deal. It's something you may not understand now, but when you get into residency, you will understand the peril of coming under a program director's watchlight. It's something you will understand when you start residency. The thing is, when you come under a program director's watchlight, or you come under the watchlight of other attendings of your seniors, little things that others may do that may not attract as much pushback will attract a lot of pushback if you're on people's watch list. It basically makes your residency experience very uncomfortable. And you will essentially be in a situation where you're like trying to go above and beyond and trying to prove yourself, because you've just established this bad reputation as a person that is at risk for not doing well on exams, right? You essentially begin to walk on eggshells, and that residency is already stressful enough. You don't want to put yourself under this cloud. Now, next thing is, you want to be humble, okay, as a resident. Don't be proud. Don't be egotistical. Don't be the person that everyone says, oh, this guy has a big ego, okay? Be humble. Try not to stir up jealousy on your own. I mean, obviously, some of this is out of your control because some people are just jealous, but be a teachable person. Don't be the person that always boasts. Don't disclose your test scores ever. Don't be the person that says, oh, you know what? I scored ninth in the 99th percentile, in the 95th percentile on my entering exam. Don't disclose your test scores ever. Don't be the source of that information. If other people hear from other people, fine, whatever. But do not disclose your USMLE scores. Your scores are for you, okay? They are for program directors. They're not for public knowledge. You don't need to disclose your test scores to other people, okay? Don't be the person that answers every single question at morning report. Because the thing is, if you're proud, you will attract attention. And again, the attention you attract will not be the good kind. Because the thing is, medical professionals in general are very competitive people. So if they see that you're succeeding so heavily and they're not, and you're boasting about it, the thing is, that jealousy can spur co-residents to basically turn against you and start doing things that can undermine you and pull you down. Okay. So again, be careful. If you're humble, you will very likely not get into these kinds of troubles. Okay. And I mean, the unfortunate thing is, sometimes you may be super humble, but some people are just super jealous by nature. Some people just do not like seeing other people succeed, and they're not succeeding. So, in view of this, be careful in residency. I'm not saying be suspicious and be like always, I'm watching out. People are out to get me. No. That's not what I'm saying. You don't need to be suspicious, but be cautious. Okay. Think twice before you trust people, because people can stab you in the back. Okay. So be very careful. Be very careful in residency. Okay. In every organization, not everyone is going to be your friend. I mean, even the Bible says this, that a man's enemies are members of his household. If you look it up, I believe it's a verse in the book of Proverbs. Okay. So just be careful. Okay. Not everyone is pleased with your successes. Okay. So just be careful in residency. Now, next thing is, you want to be an excellent communicator, okay? Communication is extremely important in residency. In fact, I will probably make a podcast that is targeted specifically towards communication as a resident. The thing is, if you're a good communicator, you can prevent many patient care errors if you pass along information, in a clear, succinct manner, right? Many conflicts, believe it or not, that arise in residency, many patient care errors that arise in residency, all arise from a failure of communication. So as an intern, try to always keep your attendance, always keep your seniors in the loop, okay? Don't be the person that acquires a reputation as, oh, he did not hand off correctly. He did not pass along this information really well. Remember if and then statements when you're doing handoffs, like if this happens, this is what you should do. That's a very good means of practicing a good communication. And again, if you're an excellent communicator, it will attract attention to you, but it will attract the good kind of attention. I mean, one thing that a senior of mine taught me that has helped me a lot is like touching base with nurses in the morning, right? So, for example, in the morning, after I like see a patient and I know what I'm doing for that patient for that day, guess what I do? I walk to the nurse and say, so for Mr. X, this is what I plan to do today. He's going for this at this time. This is what I plan to do today, blah, blah, blah. And I asked the nurse, literally, like, are there any concerns you have? They voice those concerns and we walk together to deal with those concerns. And then I ask, is there anything you need from me for this patient? If they need it from you, you fix it right there and there. The reason I do this is it basically prevents you from getting unnecessary pages during the course of the day from nurses. It's a very useful skill. In fact, I'm very thankful to my senior that actually taught me that. Your next responsibility as an intern is to do research. Okay, if you don't do research, you will very likely not be able to get into fellowship. And you will just basically limit your career options if you don't have good research on your books. Next thing is don't lie. Okay, the thing is, if you lie, people will not trust what you say. If people don't trust what you say, they will essentially begin to question and recheck your every move. Okay, and trust is one thing you definitely want to build as a resident. Now, next thing is document. This is something that you will understand the importance of when you start residency. The thing is, people cannot lie or argue against records that have been kept. Okay, if you are called for an emergency situation on the floor or something unusual happens during the course of the day, just go ahead and write a brief note, write your reasoning, write how you assess the situation, write down what you did in clear terms. Okay, because again, it's in the medical record. If something is documented, you likely will not get into trouble, especially if you explain a good reason why you did certain things. Okay, document. The brief note is your friend. It is extremely, extremely, extremely important. Now, next task as an intern, right, is you want to stay under the radar, but you don't want to be seen as a person that is completely quiet. Because the thing is, if people see you as a person that just keeps withdrawing into your shell, people can begin to pick on you and you can also get into trouble that way. You certainly do not want to do that. You want to fly under the radar, but you want to be a person. Remember, medicine is a team sport. You want to fly under the radar, but you also want to run interference with your co-residents, okay? You want to be, basically, you want to put yourself out enough to be like, oh, people know you, but you don't want to put yourself out too much to where people think you are egotistical, but you also don't want to pull yourself back too much to where people think you're a weirdo and you're not a team player, because again, that can begin to bring up issues for you in residency. Now, next thing you want to do in residency as an intern is to amass political capital, okay? Basically, this is like gaining goodwill, okay? And there are many ways you can gain goodwill, and I'll say probably like the easiest way to gain goodwill is to respect your nurses, okay? The thing is, if you do simple things like greeting nurses, touching base with your nurses in the morning, responding to your pages in a timely fashion, right? Coming when if a nurse pages you or calls you and says that they are concerned about a patient and they want you to come and assess the patient, go and assess the patient. The thing is, if you do these little things here and there, and really, to be honest with you, these things are not hard. They are very easy. If you do these things, you will build quick goodwill very, 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 very quickly. And the thing is, this goodwill will essentially spread around the hospital like wildfire, and it will make it possible for you to get things done for your patients quickly. And the thing is, nurses will be willing to go to bat for you. Other residents will be willing to go to bat for you because they know that you've established goodwill. So basically, the way you establish goodwill is by doing good deeds that you never know where you would need. Basically, let me just put it this way, because I mean, I'm a Christian and I don't do good deeds with the expectation of a return. But remember, the Bible says that you reap what you sow, right? If you sow good deeds, you reap goodwill in return, okay? So just sort of keep those things at the back of your mind, okay? Again, please, please, please don't build a bad reputation with nurses. You will make your residency experience miserable if the nurses hate you, okay? And at the end of the day, again, remember, these people you're working with, they're all your colleagues. You're one big family, okay? So act appropriately. And also, it's probably a good practice to collect phone numbers. You'd be surprised at how quickly you could get things done if you have like the phone number of like the urology chief resident or the anesthesia resident or whatever. If you need to get across to people quickly and efficiently, if you have their numbers, that's a very good quick way to do that. So I'll encourage you, collect phone numbers, save them. You never know where it will come in handy in the future. Especially like numbers of like nurse practitioners and physician assistants that work with like the different medicine subspecialties. That can make your life super, 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 super easy. Because those people are usually the gateway to their respective subspecialties. Another thing you want to do, make your attendance life easier, make your seniors life easier. I mean, there are basic things, right, that you can do well as an intern, like Scott work. You can do Scott work very well. I mean, you've been a medical student for years, right? You can do Scott work really well. Make your seniors life easy, make your attendance life easy. And again, these are just all means of acquiring goodwill, okay? Although, don't try to be so independent that you are then handling dangerous situations on your own without putting your attendant and your senior in the loop. That can get you into trouble really quickly, okay? So, if you need help, literally, ask for help. And again, avoid professionalism issues. Professionalism is probably something I should essentially make a podcast on in the future. It's just one of those terms that if it's dangled along with your name, that you have professionalism issues, that is something that is very hard to repair in a residency. I'll just put it that way. And again, try to avoid problems with your program director. Just try not to get in their bad books. The program director can make your life profoundly miserable. So really, your goal every single day is to just get in their good books. And again, I've talked about many things you can do that can help you get in your program director's good books. Okay? It's not like your program director sets out to make your life miserable. No. For the most part, under most circumstances, program directors actually work in your best interests. Okay? So make their job easier by just doing the right thing. If you do the right thing, you'll be in their good books. If you do the wrong thing, you'll be in their bad books, okay? So don't be in their bad books, because at the end of the day, they can make decisions that can have telling consequences for your future as a resident. Now, when you start a new rotation, meet your senior, meet your attending, and set expectations early. Ask them, what are your expectations of interns or whatever under these circumstances? Like, what are specific things you love people to do? And then every week, ask for feedback. Do you think I'm meeting expectations? This is essentially like a nice way to almost control the narrative you'll get in your evaluations at the end of a rotation. Yeah, I really want to try to keep this thing to 30 minutes or less. I'm going to sort of speed up here a little. Another important thing is sort of set up social needs of your patients early, right? So classic things you'll probably see if you work at any big hospital is like getting patients placed for like endocarditis, like after they clear the blood infection and then they need like IV antibiotics for a long while. Or if a patient has osteo and they need to get to a facility to get like IV antibiotics, or a person needs to go to rehab after their hospital stay. These are things you want to sort out early, right? Placement comes first. It's just one of those things you want to, in fact, I'll tell you this. When you're admitting a patient, as part of your workup of a patient, ask yourself, are there any social needs that may impact this patient's stay? If you identify social needs, literally, once you're done with the admission, go meet social work and begin to tee these things up from the get-go, okay? It can make you very efficient and it can actually reduce a patient's length of stay in the hospital. Remember, pre-certs, getting placed, all that stuff, insurance approvals take time. So start them early. So that while you're taking care of the medical problems of a patient, you're also taking care of the social problems of a patient, so that as the medical problems are resolving, the social problems have already been resolved and they can get out of the hospital as quickly and efficiently as possible. Now, also you want to get good at like some basic procedures like intubation, placing arterial lines, placing central lines. If you're really gung-ho, maybe getting good at placing gambros. Those are things you use for like temporary dialysis. Those are things you skill, especially intubations, right? You want to get good at intubations. It's one thing that may save your butt, especially if you have like a crashing patient in the future. And this last rule is something I've read a lot on SDN and is a useful rule to know. Remembering that they can always hurt you more. They can always hurt you more, right? So what does this mean? Basically, if something happens, don't be the person that always complains, right? If something is not egregious, if something is something you can tolerate and just deal with and doesn't affect your life significantly, to be honest, don't complain against your seniors. Don't complain against your attendants. I'm not encouraging bad behavior here, right? Again, in fact, this, basically what I'm saying now does not reflect the views of any residency program I'm associated with. But basically, I'll just tell you this. Don't be the person that always complains, okay? Don't be the person that always complains. If you're a master repetition as the person that always complains, people can begin to turn against you. And whether you like it or not, as an intern, you have a lot less power than a second year, and a second year has a lot less power than a senior resident, and a resident has a lot less power than an attending. Okay, so again, don't be, basically, develop some sort of thick skin. Again, if something really bad is happening and this is like affecting a patient, affecting you personally, obviously you should report those things. I'm not saying to keep these things in, but don't be the person that, oh, you report every single thing. You just basically build a bad reputation. And basically, let's just say you may have certain unforeseen consequences from being the person that just does not get along and always reports everything. Like every little thing that happens gets under your skin. Do not acquire that reputation. So I think I've probably said enough, and this is looks like a pretty good stopping point for me. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. I'll try to make more residency focused podcasts in the future. And again, as I round up, I want to mention that I offer one-on-one tutoring for the USMLE Step 1, Step 2 CK, Step 2 CS, and Step 3 exams. I have tutored thousands of people that have done super well on these exams. Talk about like 90th, 95th percentile sort of scores. I also tutor for the preclinical med school exams, the third year shelf exams, the internal medicine in training exam, and the internal medicine board exams, believe it or not. And I also have admissions committee experience with a top 3 medical school. I've been on an admissions committee before, so I actually prepare like ERAS applications for med students applying to residency and AMCAS applications for college students applying to med school. Like I can do mock interviews, I can help with personal statements and all that stuff. Okay. And on the offhand, you have a friend or relative that needs tutoring in organic chemistry, I also offer tutoring for those for organic chemistry as a discipline. So I hope you have a wonderful day. I think this is probably like a record for me. This is like the third podcast I believe I'm making today. Today is obviously a day off, so I'm trying to like make the most of my free day and by churning out as many podcasts as possible. So have a wonderful week ahead. I wish you the very best and God bless. And the match is actually coming up this week, so I'm wishing everyone, I hope you all match. If you don't match, remember, it's not the end of the world. There's the soap, there's the scramble. It's an anxiety-provoking process, but, you know, pray. Okay, I'm a Christian, I believe in prayer. Pray, okay? Seek good advice and, you know, just try to play your cards right and learn from your mistakes. And, you know, I wish you all the very best. If you're ever in any like tenor situation, you can reach out and I can try to draw from my wealth of experience to, you know, try to guide you in the right direction. So have a wonderful week. God bless. I'll see you in the next podcast. Thank you.